second session at and the portfolio committee. The department is on its first session. We've got two presentations that we expect from the department. The responses to the SONA and your APP. We have already explained that we've got members that are attending other portfolio committees that are sitting in more than one. So that's why some of them are not here. But otherwise, we continue, we proceed. Welcome, DG, and your team. We will give it to you to decide how you want to go about presentation. And then I think the best thing would be present both of them. Present the other one, finish and do the other one. No discussion in between, so we discuss them once and for all, because there's going to be a linkage between the SONA response and your APP. So I don't know if that makes sense to you. Because some of the questions that we might ask on the SONA response might be answered by some APP. So do both. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have invited the CEOs of the entities to join us as well. I'm sure others are still coming. They were wrapping up in another meeting that we were chairing as the department. I think it's proper, Chair, because this is about the APP. We're presenting our plans. Going forward, we're telling the world and the citizens of this country how we are going to perform in this current financial year. So these are the targets that we are outlining and contracting with you and the citizens of the country. Perhaps it's proper to start from the beginning and say the organization is stable. The Department of Human Settlements is one of the stable departments at national level. We may be experiencing problems here and there, but it is a stable entity. At a strategic level, we have combined experience of more than 100 years. If you look at the strategic managers who are managing this organization, at an individual level, at the collective level, we have solid executive managers, strategic managers, with years of experience, and you can look at all of them individually. They all grew up the ranks. They were never parachuted into strategic positions. They have operated at the junior level, at the middle management level, at an operational level. So they are operating at a strategic level because they do qualify. So the organization is well managed at a strategic level. We have concluded some of the vacancies at a strategic level with the arrival of Mr. Bowder, Amedi Bowder, who is now taking care of policy and research in the department. Mr. Bowder has been in the industry from the beginning. He's worked at local government level, he's worked in the private sector. At some point he was the DG in the Department of Human Settlements, and he went to DPME as a specialist advisor there, responsible for outcome aid. Now he's back in the department. I just thought that it's proper to start there, just to give you an indication that we have a department which is well managed. We may have challenges in some areas, and I'm sure the AG has highlighted those areas that we are not doing very well. I'll come back to some of the issues that have been highlighted. by the Egypt after the presentation of SONA, the SONA issues. And with the entities, Chair, again, if you look at our entities as compared to other entities in other sectors, we are of the view that we have entities that are well stable. There may be challenges here and there with governance matters in one or two entities, but in general, all of our entities are stable. Some of the boards, their term is coming to an end soon. For instance, the NHPRC board, their term is coming to an end in July. We have started the process of appointing new board members. Other entities, the term is coming to an end in November. CISOs, I think the term is coming to an end in November. The SHRA board, some members, their term has come to an end. The HDA board as well, we will have to replace four board members. We will run that process, share with you, because by law we are mandated by Parliament to run the process with the two chairs, the chair of Human Settlements and the chair of NCOB. So we started the process and we will be advertising soon. It's in our interest to make sure that the entities are well managed and they are stable. The CEOs of the entities as well, they are very well experienced CEOs. They have years of experience in the industry. We work with them because if they don't perform, we don't perform. So we hold each other accountable. But we think that we have experienced CEOs. I'm not going to waste time. I'm going to ask Neville to take us through the SONA items. You may have noticed that there were no specifics. There were no specifics about human settlements. But because we are one government, if the president has spent a lot of time on economic issues, human settlements does make that contribution to economic issues. Besides, we serve in the economic cluster. We participate fully in the economic cluster, and we also participate in the social cluster. There were too many issues that came out at the SON, and one of them is how to turn the economy around, and the other one was how to deal with youth unemployment. But Neville will touch on all of those issues. Without wasting time, I want to ask Neville to take us through the SON responses, then we'll come back to the APP. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, colleagues. Chair, as indicated, slide two, as indicated by the DG, there were no specific references to human settlements and housing by the President in SONA. But I think it's important to note, as we indicate in the presentation, that the integrated, collaborative, and coordinated work of the state, that the department plays a key role in a number of the strategic areas highlighted by the President, and we'll highlight that. I think particularly, and I think sometimes what we need to be able to do is to just remind ourselves, particularly in relation to the department, the role that we play in the eradication of poverty, inequality, as well as unemployment and socioeconomic transformation. Because sometimes in our discussions and focus on the numbers and the quantity and whether or not we're meeting our targets, the underlying policy reasons for why we do certain things. And just a very simple thing, the provision of sanitation in informal settlements is an important aspect. Because sometimes I think we don't realize that if you're a woman staying in an informal settlement and there's no particular, there's no proper lighting, there's no proper energy, it's difficult to be able to understand how a female or a young girl staying in an informal settlement has to use the bathroom during the course of the night. So these are some of the issues, and that's why, for example, in the emphasis we make on that. The policies, legislation, and implementation frameworks of the department as a national department are designed in such a way that there's a substantial amount of integration between those outputs and outcomes. Chair, just to go through the specifics, the department has got two grants as two main grants, as members would be aware, and these are the Human Settlements Development Grant and the Urban Settlements Development Grant. And in relation to the points raised by the President in the SONA, members, Chair, you will know that the President raised the issue around set-asides, particularly in relation to youth, women, military vets, military veterans, as well as persons with disabilities. And I think it's important to note, Chair, you'll know that in our quarterly reports, we've been reporting on the set-asides. In our case, there's a 30% already that we have in terms of the policy that allows that a mandatory 30% of all work and funding must be spent on women, youth. So that's in place. But I think there are areas where as part of our processes, we need to perhaps maybe just improve on certain of those issues. The second point in relation to the spending and the focus and how it goes towards addressing the issues that are raised in the SONA is that investment in socioeconomic infrastructure occurs through our grants. And these include the fact that in the case of the USDG, we build libraries, we build fire stations, or we fund the construction of libraries, we fund the construction of fire stations, we fund the construction of community centers. You will know, even in the Human Settlements Development Grant, there's a 2% that together with the support of Parliament, we've been able to allow, that provides for community infrastructure, but also bulk and link. The USDG funds energy through the form of a whole range of even street lights, the question of solar packs that are being undertaken, as well as roads and transport infrastructure. President did raise the issue around the question of focus on mining towns and our need to address that. And you'll know that for the last last 6 years, we've had ring fence funding for distressed mining towns, as well as the labor ascendant areas. The dependency between those two, the mining towns and the labor sending areas. I think what we need to be able to concede, Chair, and that comes through in the APP of the department together with some of the entities of how we're trying to address that. I think in the case of the city of Cape Town, I mean, President referred to the point about the drought. But I think might not be a well-known fact, but in the case of the city of Cape Town, there has been USDG funding that has been used and applied in the alleviation of those drought conditions in relation to water sanitation. The Title Deeds program, which was not specifically referred to, but covers the issue around household and poor households, in fact, in two aspects. One, increasing household wealth, but also in relation to the right to land and property. So the point about it is one of the key issues around the title deeds program is its linkage to the issue of the land question and the ability for particularly those citizens that did not have access and security of tenure in relation to land. And that's an important aspect or developmental aspect. In the address by President Ramaphosa, there was an issue around the question of student higher education, the focus on higher education, and the point being that in order for us to be able to maximize that spend, the ancillary matters that must be addressed. And one of the issues that we know Stats SA raised was that it's all very well providing the funding, but if there's no support mechanisms in terms of accommodation, ensuring that students are able to feed themselves and provide other socioeconomic provision, your dropout rate becomes higher. And in our case, Chair, you'll know that on the first issue, just on 5.2 on that slide 4, that the department together with the HDA, the Shura, as well as some of the municipalities, we have already been providing funding for the upgrading of buildings. So the reference is made to Braamfontein. And a particular issue here is that in Braamfontein, for example, in the city of Joburg, there's a substantial amount of students that do occupy buildings that have been upgraded utilizing money from the department's coffers and the RCG. We also wanted to link the issue that, for example, in the case of Mangosuthu in Etequini, we have provided support to Mangosuthu to extend the residences. So over the next 3 years, for example, 4 years I think it is, there's about 4,000 additional student residences that will be built. And one of the things that we did as a department was provide the Balkan link infrastructure through the USDG, through Itequini. Chair, on this slide, yeah, it's just important to highlight the fact that one of the issues that the DG has raised as a counting officer is that between the department and the entities, there's a number of initiatives, programs funded, both socioeconomic transformation and otherwise, in relation to women and youth. But these programs are very disparate, and there's no clear, concrete strategy with outcomes that we report on. It gets reported on, but it gets reported individually. So there's good work that gets done by the HDA. There's good work that gets done by the NHBRC in terms of its training programs, the EAB One Learner. But these are not coordinated. And I think what DG is indicated through the specific official in the department is to come up with that strategy and the reporting mechanism. So for the portfolio, we'll be able to say this is what we've done, this is when we've done it, and this is what the impact has been, just to improve the coordination. Chair members, you'll know that the President also raised the issue around the question of SMMEs and the question of the 30-day period, payment period as provided. And you'll know, Chair, that even in the reports that we've been providing to yourselves, it's one of the issues that the CFO does monitor. In fact, it's a directive that all the provinces, municipalities, and entities in the human settlements sector, state sector, report to MINMET and Minister on adherence to this. In relation to the issues related to land and property, it's important to note that the department already has a joint coordinating committee, which was established in 2010, consisting of representation from Public Works, Public Enterprises, Rural Development and Land Reform, COCTA, and we now have additions from transport. And what this committee does, Chair, and there's a report that we will be able to produce and provide you with the concrete outputs and deliverables, is that all state land, that's provincial and municipal, before it gets sold, it must be offered to human settlements. So all that non-core land, and the CEO for the HDA is here, and the HDA is the lead agency in relation to that. But I think also in relation to one of the things that has been raised is that in relation to urban land and property, pushing back the boundaries of the separation and the spatial dislocation, the HDA will provide and will be positioned to provide that assistance to achieve government's objectives in relation to that. And in specific reference, for example, in the case of the city of Joburg, both the HDA and the SHRA are providing support in relation to reclaiming some of those buildings that have been abandoned. Then the focus on the catalytic class and income special planning patterns. And that's clear. Yeah, I think what is just important to note in relation to what we indicated is that in the totality of what the president raised around SONA as well as the APP of the department, it's important to look at this as a composite whole of what happens over the next 3 days. So the alignment between what the department does and what the entities does, because where the department has got deficiencies in its APP, it may not be a deficiency because there's a conscious decision that the NHBRC or the HDA will take up that responsibility, and there's clear demonstration of that, Chair. The last point which we haven't raised here, Chair, was the issue around the question of the governance of the entities, and I think DG's raised that issue, the stability of the entities, particularly in relation to the functionality of governance. Performance might be an issue that we can all debate, but I think that's the one issue. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Nevin. Perhaps, Chair, we'll get now to the APP, which is the core business of today. Maybe let me be a little bit unconventional in introducing this topic. Maybe start with the budget and say, I know that the CFO is going to spend a little bit of time on this one. If you look at the baseline figures, the amount of money that we're supposed to be managing in this current financial year, we made projections that we're supposed to be managing 35 billion rands this year. Just want to simplify it so that you understand the nature of the cuts and the impact of the cuts on the budget. We're supposed to be managing 35 billion rands based on the revised, on the original baseline. But the budget for this current financial year is 32 billion rands. It's been reduced by almost 3 billion rands. The CFO will come to this. Why am I starting here? I'm starting here because we need to be clear about what we can buy with that budget in this current financial year. We need to be very specific about what the money can buy. There is no doubt amongst ourselves as senior government officials and treasury that the impact is huge. In fact, the cut has shocked the system, because if you get a three billion rand cut in 1 year, that shocks the system. But our job is to mitigate the risk and find means and ways to manage with what we have. Please bear in mind, Chair, that this year is the last year of this term of government, this current financial year. So the term of government will come to an end in March next year. So there's a lot of recovery work that needs to be done with the limited budget that we have. I'm starting here because what we thought will be doable in the beginning of this term of government may not be doable now. But we've started some measures to make sure that at least we don't drop any ball in those priority targets, which is why you will see when the CFO is presenting that we have introduced new grants. I think Neville will talk to that as well. There are new grants that we have introduced, the emergency housing grant, the title deed grant, which we have introduced. Going back to the presentation, Chair, I'm not going to waste much time. I just want to state the fact that we'll still continue with the priority program. Mining towns, the catalytic projects, land and property acquisition, development, and we'll do this with municipalities, provinces, and entities. They are still our implementing agencies. We hold them accountable, we disperse the grant to them, and we support them. The AG has asked a question about support in Program 3. when you say you support, what do you mean in practical terms? And the reason why we have that support is because Program 3 at a national level is about supporting those who are implementing. You always ask us, DG, if the Department of Human Settlements in Limpopo was not clear and they were not performing well, what did you do? And all I can do as a national accounting officer is to provide that support. The same applies to the entities. When the entities are not performing, what is expected of the national department is to provide that support to the entities. We share our resources, go out to the market, get the whatever capacity that we need to get to provide the support. So we will continue with the support in these areas, in the mining towns, the catalytic projects, and land and property acquisition, and other priority programs. Chair, I need to stress that we have one area that we will pay particular attention to in this current financial year, and that is the area of time needs. This is one area that has not been performing consistently for the last 5 years. The time needs program, we picked it up in year one and in year two, that this is not getting the attention that it deserves from provinces. And why it's not getting the attention is because it is regarded as an old business. You know, when you, even myself as a former HOD, I had to make a call as to whether I want to prioritize old business or new business. And the old business is about those title deeds that we have not issued post-1994. And if we haven't issued the title deeds post-1994, that problem is not going to go away. As you can see, the bulk of the backlog in the area of title deeds is about the title deeds in areas where we haven't done proper planning, what we used to call upstream planning activities. I want to also, Chair, stress the point. This is the slide. I just wanted to pick. I don't want to go through every bullet because it will take us the whole day. The only item that I'm highlighting in the first slide is the last bullet, which talks to the work by the Auditor General on title deeds. That particular item there on completeness controls, verification of the performance information, the bigger part of it is the work that we're doing in title deeds. What we have said with the AG is that when it comes to housing, we always make this point that if it's not in the HSS, it has not been delivered, because we use HSS for controls. So the same rule has to be used for title deeds, that when we say a title deed has been delivered, it needs to be reflected in the HSS. But we don't end there. You can take that particular title deed and check against the deeds office. Because what we don't want is for provinces to submit a number to us that they have issued the next number of title deeds, and only to deliver that what is reflected in the HSS is different from what was submitted to us. So we have to put controls and measures in place to make sure what is reported to the AG, what is reported to us by provinces, is in the HSS and is also reflected in the deeds office. That's what the AG is looking for. We met with the AG and we're very clear about how to report on that particular item. I also had a meeting with the HODs last week, Friday, to discuss this particular matter. Chair, again, the MTSF targets, we think that we will achieve a significant number of those targets. The ones that we're not likely to achieve, the only two where we are likely not to meet those targets, and that is the title deeds and informal settlements upgrading. But with informal settlements upgrading, I think we will be closer to meeting that target. And we're making this projection based on what we have received from provinces, from the business plans. And that talks to bullet number 3 on the slide, which says that focus emphasis on the capacity and technical support provided to provinces, municipalities and entities. Remember, provinces, municipalities and entities, they contract with us through the APP to help us achieve the 5-year targets. So based on our assessment of these targets, we are of the view that we're not likely to meet the title deeds target, and we're not likely to meet the informal settlements upgrading target, but we'll get closer. I think we'll reach more than 80% on informal settlements upgrading, and perhaps the title deeds, we're still doing an assessment. I think there's concerted effort to make sure that we make a significant impact on that particular target. The bills, I'm sure we'll come back to this one, but there are three bills that we're targeting in this current financial year, the year under review, and that is Property Practitioners Bill, the Housing Consumer Protection Measures Amendment Bill, which talks to NHBRC, the Home Loans and Mortgage Disclosure Amendment Bill. The first one, Chair, is very significant to us because it changes the old apartheid legislation. You will recall that we still use the 1976 legislation to regulate EAAB. Once that bill is passed, it would mean in practical terms that we establish a new entity altogether. There will be a new board that will have to be established. And we talked about whether it's not wise to have a transitional arrangement, at least at the management level, where we appoint a transitional CEO who will record that there's an acting CEO in that entity. But this is what Minister is still applying her mind on. Chair, we have a new grant. I've already stated this, that we have the title deed restoration grant. You recall that we used to ring-fence a portion of HSDG, the Human Settlements Development Grant, to focus on title deeds. But what we picked up over the last 2 years is that at the end of the year, provinces will only spend about 50% of that grant. And the other 50% will go into funding new business. So we then took a decision with the support of National Treasury to create a fully fledged grant for title deeds. And we received the business plans from all the 9 provinces. We assessed those business plans last week. We will be presenting them to MINMEC. But they have already contracted with us and we have submitted the plans to National Treasury. We've talked about the emergency housing grant, and this allows the minister to intervene immediately. You can't declare an area as an emergency and then take 12 months to respond. So this grant will make it possible for minister to respond where there are emergencies. There will be a lot of emergencies, Chair, with the climate change. We have seen a lot of floods, we've seen fires, and we have seen disasters in a number of provinces. This grant will make it easy for us to intervene and intervene timelessly. The last part, again, it talks to some of the policy work that we still have to do. If there's a question on these matters, I'm sure Amit will be able to respond to it. We still talk about the Housing Code and the Housing Act. We have to amend that. Chances are maybe before the end of this term. The timelines are very tight. We shared with you in Hermana some of those timelines. But our intention is to make sure that in this current financial year, we come up with the Human Settlements Code. We're still using the Housing Code, the 17 programs in the Housing Code. So it will be very important for us that at least we start the new term of government with the Human Settlements Code. The amendment of the Housing Act to Human Settlements legislation, that's what the team is working on, is also in the APP for this current financial year. Repealing the Housing Consumer Protection Measures Act, I already touched on that, and enhancing the work that the NHBRC is working on. The Human Settlements Development Bank Bill, we don't think that this bill will be passed before the end of this term. But it's important to prioritize it because National Treasury will not be able to capitalize this entity if this bill is not passed. They have made it very clear to us that if you want us to capitalize this new bank, pass the bill. We have not been moving very fast on this bill. But if there is a way we can expedite it and we can put it through the sausage machine and put it through the process so that at least by the end of March this year, it's at an advanced stage. The Amendment of Prevention of Illegal Eviction and Unlawful Occupation of Land Act, this is the PIE Act. There are quite a number of views amongst us as technocrats on this one. Maybe we need to go back to the drawing board and look at what is it exactly that we want to achieve. Remember, the legislation is intended to achieve policy objectives. What are the policy objectives that we want to achieve here? Because I think there were quite a number of emotions about the constitutional rulings, and emotional views about the constitutional rulings. And every time the Constitutional Court makes a ruling on eviction, we get emotional as technocrats. So I think we need to maybe go slow on this one, just agree on what needs to be done. And this again has been influenced by a number of court cases where we were asked to provide alternative accommodation. And bear in mind that the PIE Act is not going to help you if the bylaws are not functioning in metros and municipalities, because if the bylaws are not implemented and people invade land and you don't activate bylaws, it's not the PIE Act that is going to help you, because the PIE Act says the fact that people have invaded the land illegally doesn't mean that government must evict them illegally. That's basically what the PIE Act says in simple terms. You have to follow the process of evicting people. You can't just evict them illegally. So that's we need to be clear about why we want this piece of legislation to be amended and which clauses that we are dealing with. Local government is very strong on this. I think they have lobbied significantly on why this particular legislation should be amended. We ran quite a number of workshops with them where they wanted us to amend certain clauses. But those clauses must be in line with the Constitution. You can't put clauses in the Act that are not constitutional. Policy review and evaluations that is contracted for in this current year of implementation, the revision of the social policy, social housing policy and regulations. Here we have been asked by the Department of Higher Education and Training to assist them in some areas with student accommodation. And they were of the view that in some cases you may not have to tweak the Social Housing Act to implement student housing. We're meeting the DG tomorrow at 5 o'clock, the DG of Higher Education and Training, because we need to go back and maybe report to the departments as to how we're going to assist the Department of Higher Education and Training to provide student housing. By the way, the bigger part of fees must fall combined is about student housing and student accommodation. It's not so much about tuition fees. It's about unaffordable rentals that students are being asked to pay. So it's expected that government will have to come up with an approach on how to deal with student accommodation. We do have some ideas as to how to manage this. I'm now going to ask Neville to take us through the programs. In the EPP, we talk about programs. When we contract in terms of programs. Program 1, Program 2, Program 3, and Program 4. Program 1 is about administration, sound administration, and the bigger part of that is clean audit. We always contract to deliver clean audit, what is called unqualified audit with no matters. Because some people are saying there's no such a thing as a clean audit. It's unqualified audit with no matters. Of emphasis. And then number 2 is policy, program 2 is policy and planning. And Neville will touch on that. We've got targets. Then program 3 is what we do in provinces, in entities, and in the department. So the number of targets that we want to deliver in program 3. Program 3 is arguably our core business. That's what it's about. It's about delivery of housing, delivery of service sites, and that's why they always say in program 3 there is no waffling. It's either you have a house or you don't have a house. There is no in between. And And this, and then we have program four. And program four is effectively about disbursements. In provinces, you would have noticed, Chair, this is one area that we've been debating with the audit, the AG, the Auditor General. But you would have noticed that provinces, they have their own APPs. And the APPs are not necessarily in line with what we do at the national level. I think it's important to correct this, because provinces have their own targets and they have their own equitable share that they use to buy some of the targets. But the most important program in provinces is program three, because that's where the business plan comes from. Provinces contract with us through the business plan. They submit the business plan to us. The bulk of the budget, the 33 billion rand budget that we administer, buys all of those targets in provinces that are in program three, which is the houses, the land, the service sites, you name them. So we only focus on program three because they submit a business plan through program three and we submit it to Treasury. Anything else, program one is not what we focus on in provinces because they report to provincial legislature on program one. I need to state, Chair, I forgot to mention up front that the only manager who has tendered an apology today, and that manager is very responsible for program three, is Joseph Shabani. He is not well. He has not been well for almost a week now. I'm now going to ask Neville to take us through the programs in the APP. Neville.
Thank you, Chair, members. Chair, this slide on slide six just gives an indication of, in terms of the strategic plan, there are 10 targets. And in terms of the APP, there's 46, and that's 56 targets that we measure ourselves. As indicated previously, based on a directive issued by the DG as accounting officer, 60% of these targets will go on individual performance, 20% in relation to the overall performance of the department, and then 20% in relation to compliance. So as we've indicated, one of the things that we need to just indicate is that compliance does, I mean, although compliance is not a major or seen to be as not an important issue, it's important in the sense that it drives a correction in relation to behavior and ensuring that there's measures put in place that allows for consequences, and I think that's the important thing. Chair, in relation to just the slide that follow, in relation to program one, in terms of its strategic goal is to enhance efficiency and effectiveness. And particularly around this issue, Chair, is that one of the key issues that we want to deal with, and I think it's important, and I think it's an important thing for yourselves as Parliament, given the fact that you appropriate Vote 38, is the unqualified opinion with no matters of emphasis. Chair, that has been something that has been elusive. We thought we would get it last year, but it was just something that, and I'm sure the AG would have said to you, we've had some very robust discussions with the AG around the issues of performance information. So that's it. Chair, I think it's also important to note just on this here is that an important aspect in terms of driving the department's governance, efficiency and effective is the emphasis on risk management. So in relation to ensuring that there's a proper risk management plan, there's a proper enterprise-wide risk, as well as the risk champions and risk owners, which is in place, and that's a compliance issue which we think we've achieved some ability to improve, but as we've indicated, the 100% implementation there. Also, in relation to this, Chair, is the aspect related to, and it falls here, is the anti-fraud and corruption plan, and then also the legislation as well as the human resource aspects fall under program one. Chair, one of the issues that we have raised, and I think it's an issue that we you'll see in the document we speak about the 90% availability of secure ICT services. Now, there's been a progressive development around this, Chair, and I think our audit action plan, particularly in relation to ICT, will say that we've now got those governance committees in place, particularly in relation to the governance committee, the ICT Steercom, as well as the compliance issues. One of the things that we have been addressing is the issue of particularly the IT performance and governance aspects. And Chair, I think it's just important to acknowledge the support of the HDA with the kindness of Mr. Pascal Molloy's assistance. We've been able to sort of leverage some of their expertise in relation to ICT. We're not there yet, Chair. And I think if you look at our audit plan, we're hoping, and I hope this doesn't come back to haunt me, is that we're hoping that this year, Chair, we will achieve that objective. If we achieve that objective, Chair, we will then get the clean audit that the DG and yourself and Minister so want. Chair, then on the issue around Program 2, the policy framework, and I think the issue here, the DG has raised this issue, is the question of the policy framework, particularly in relation to the Human Settlements White Paper and the draft to be achieved in relation to that, as well as the code, and then also the development plan in relation to the HSDG and the USDG. You'll see that we've raised that. Chair, then on this slide, and this is on slide 11, particularly in relation to Program 2, it's around the question of ensuring that we get those partnerships in place, and particularly those partnerships that we're speaking about, a substantial amount of them cover aspects related to the mining towns, and I think there's six of them that are covered there, and in relation to this, about assisting the entity, particularly HBA and SHRA as well, in relation to achieving some of those partnerships. Chair, then in relation to Program 3, there's the issues around the question of the catalytic projects, the distressed mining communities program. There's the informal settlements, particularly in relation to assessments, feasibility and upgrading. Chair, I'm not sure if members, I mean, I think it's just important that I pause here, because I think in relation to this, you know, and they say that you make your own luck in life. I don't know if members had a look at the business day today, but in relation to the mayor that was incarcerated for failure to address the issues of emergency housing for households that had been illegally evicted. Now, one of the things that we're addressing as a department, particularly in relation to this, is this issue around informal settlements, the fact that there needs to be feasibility, but also in relation to informal settlements, is the ability for municipalities and provinces to adequately respond when there is an emergency. And we must distinguish between emergency and disaster. And in relation to that, we're speaking about fires, we're speaking about floods, we're speaking about those winds, because one of the things that has been raised is that, and I think you know that, is that there's always this very, very slow response, particularly when it comes to households living in those areas, and it's one of the issues that has been raised there. Chair, then in relation to this, the as indicated by the DG, Program 3 covers a substantial amount of the MTSF in terms of the private affordable housing, the support, the social housing program, and those issues will, for example, as I've indicated, Chair, when we speak about the social housing program, one must reference this to what the concrete targets are in the SHRA. Because, Chair, as we've indicated, it's all very well looking at the HSDG and the USDG, but it's important to note that in terms of the restructuring capital grant, there's 1 billion rand that goes into that, And then there's also the capacity grants that go that the department provides support to municipalities, provinces, and entities. The CRU, in relation to the residential units for conversions from hostels, and then we also chair in relation to the title deeds restoration program. When we do present to yourselves in relation to the business plan the concrete numbers in terms of what we have to achieve per province and nationally, is there both pre and post 1994. Chair, you'll see that in relation to the title deed, it's on page 15 and slide 15 and 16. The one is the pre and post 1994. And then the one is from April 2014, where we've distinguished the old, as DG refers to, versus the new. Also included here, Chair, is the issue around the question of training, as well as the implementation of the or the single DFI to be established, which has also been another elusive target for us, Chair. We've also, Chair, in the process of also supporting the youth, and there's a couple of programs that are funded under that. The assessments, construction, 30%, and then Chair, as we've indicated in our on page 19 or slide 19, you'll see that we've been clear about this. 30% of the HSDG. Construction budget allocated to designated groups as per regulation. So we've left no uncertainty around that. We've actually issued the customized indicators to the provinces and municipalities to include that. It's not only in relation to HSDG, but you can see on slide 19, it's the HSDG as well as the USDG, and that's per regulation. So there's no leeway for any interpretation outside of this. Chair, then we'll go to program four, which is also the Office of Disclosure. And as I've indicated, Chair, we've raised the issue that perhaps maybe what we need to be able to do is to, and the CFO in future quarterly reports will produce the reports that are there in relation to the Office of Disclosure. And this gives us an indication, particularly in relation to the missing middle, which we've been asked to address. DG, I've done that.
We'll ask the CFO Chair to take us through the budget. The APP is incomplete without the budget aspect of it. CFO.
Thank you very much, DG. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, colleagues, good afternoon. Chair, I think the DG has talked much on the budget, but I think the slide that is on the table provides members with the history of where we come from in as far as the budget is concerned. You will see that the figures are trending and going high, but as you would have noticed in the past, that while they were trending high, there is an element of them not buying what we have planned to purchase in terms of our business plan, simply because of the weakened rand or the value of the rand that has gone down. And I think we always emphasize the fact that we may want to see the budget in the form of an increase, but when we get to the value part of it on the ground and the purchasing of your material, it tends to slow down in terms of the value. But I think if we can be in a position to can utilize this money as it looks in this, we would be in a position to can buy more out of this and leverage out of any other funding that the department would seek from outside, as it has been other forums. But I think, as mentioned from DG's remarks earlier on, that we come from an indicative budget of 35.4 billion, that as we move along, you will realize that it has reduced to 32.3, But I think this slide gives you a summary of the MTF budget over the 3-year period to 2021, whereby you will see that as we move along, we have a budget of approximately 101 billion, reduced from 112 billion from the cuts that we have received. So in this financial year, and if we can move to the next slide, is in this financial year, we shall be reporting on the budget of 32.3 billion or 32.4 to sum it up. But I think the importance of this slide is to show you the cuts that we have received from National Treasury. There were some enforced cuts of 2 billion from the cabinet point of view. And then the difference that is noticeable there is the reallocation, or one would put it in a simple way to say top slicing, as we had came up with new grants. I think the emphasis that we need to put on the table here is that those four grants, so to speak, do not come from a new budget at all, Chairperson. We had to redirect funds from the HSDG and USDG to come up with a title deed restoration program and the grant itself and your municipal provincial emergency housing grant. Now, that sums the 948 million that we took only from the HSDG over the MTF period and not, unfortunately, from the USDG. The USDG, as we shall see along the line, is reduced slightly compared to the HSDG. So the HSDG has largely been affected by the grant. Even the 2 billion that has been introduced by cabinet largely affected the HSDG. So if we look at this baseline, it has been reduced over the MTF by an amount of 10.8 billion. That is giving us in a budget of 101 over the period of 3 years to 2021. That amount includes the operational budget of the department, and as we move along, we will give you the difference between the grants, if not from the capital, as well as the operational budget. The three grants that have been introduced are supported by a new grant that also took the money from the HSDG to the tune of 95.1 million over the 3-year period. And that on its own will support the title deed restoration grant of 1.6 billion over the period of 3 years. Then the emergency grant from the municipality, or to the municipalities rather, as well as the provincial, that will actually respond to the disasters or emergencies that erupt as we move along with the disasters in the country. The next slide talks to the economic classification per department. And I think if we look at this slide, Chair, we're giving you the whole bunch of items that we pay through the HSDG, or rather the operational budget of the department. But I must be slow on the fact that if you look at your cost of employee, or the cost to the employer, which is your compensation of employees, it has reduced significantly from the 383 million to 376. But one could just as well indicate to the House that the 376, which was an indicative allocation from the previous 2017 MTF, it looked stagnant there. But with everyone knowing that there is that inflationary adjustment of 7% or 6.5, if we take the 6.5 into consideration, we find ourselves not having enough money in as far as the cost to employer budget is concerned. Even the 376 that we are sitting with is not able to even fund the current structure that we are having. So it is lesser by almost 333 million if you compare it to 383, given the 7% inflationary adjustment that we always have every year. Although it moves to 405 and 436 in the outer years, we are still sitting with the challenge of finalizing that amount to the structure, the organizational structure that we have. Hence again, we emphasize the fact that our appointments are still at the period of a 3-year contract, because we do not want to find ourselves appointing on a permanent basis when we would not be able to fund the appointments beyond the period of 186 million against the 2021 financial year. The goods and services again has reduced drastically, but I must emphasize that from the cut of the HSDG, we have received an amount of 95 million over the MTF, but it's supporting specifically the title restoration program. It's not, it's an earmark fund that cannot be used for any other items in as far as operational budget is concerned, but specifically for the title deed restoration program. And it's supporting the grant that has just been newly formed. The payment of capital assets, it stays the same. It's not a big amount, as a matter of fact, it's within the department. But then the bigger part of our money is our investment to the National Housing Finance Corporation of 80 million and 50 million. But if we go back to the DFI that, rather the bank that is to be finalized, that amount will be utilized as capital to the bank itself, and any other amount that we shall be redirecting it based on the non-availability of funding from National Treasury from the current fiscal that we have in as far as the Department of Human Settlement is concerned. So we shall be sitting with those two amounts as investments to National Housing Finance Corporation, and unfortunately we have lost funds to the Rural Housing Loan Fund to 2017-18. We don't have any transfers that we shall be making to them, given the fact that the bank is going to be in operation. Then now much larger of the part of the budget goes to your HSDG, USDG, and the three grants that we have established in this year to the tune of 330.3 billion. And 1 billion of your 32 billion goes again to your entities, to your SHRAs, your CISOs, as well as the HDA, receiving a 222,177 in 2018-19, and only 247 over, or rather in 2019. The rest, Chair, are the commitments that we have, the departments, our engagements with the UNAVTED, as well as the confirmation of the money that we have for the chairs of the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. So this chair basically sums up the items that the whole 32.4 billion buys in the department before we could even get to what the metros and the provinces would purchase with their budget allocation. The next slide, please. Chair, I did indicate a cut from the HSDG, which was taken significantly from the 19.9 billion. And the report suggests to say that in this financial year, we shall be reporting the HSDG to the value of to the tune of 18.1 billion. If you look at the 2017 to 2018, there's major cuts in as far as your allocation is concerned, but we're still sitting with your Northern Cape receiving the far less allocation in terms of the allocation formula. But I mean, there's a more expectation that we shall be getting units within the parameters of Northern Cape as usual in terms of the budget and the plans that they have. But I know for the fact that there's much that we can receive in the Gauteng, and although 500 million was taken away from the budget of Gauteng to for them to receive a 5 billion budget. So if you look at all these amounts, Chairperson, there's large expectation towards the business plan. And as I indicated, it depends on how we use this money towards purchasing the units and services as depicted in your business plan, which we shall be presenting later on after this presentation. Then the USDG, again, it was cut, but it's not largely affected by most of the cuts. And Chair, I think if we look at the current status of the changes that you have from your Eastern Cape as a province, from 1.679 to 1.668, there is no major cut on that budget. But if you also look at your biggest part of your USDG, which is going to Gauteng, it's still sitting at 5.4 billion. So the 11.3 to 11.3, the difference of that is only 60 million and it's 282. Overall, if we are to calculate it over the MTF period for the USDG. So there's nothing much that has been cut in the HSDG, although we tried utmostly when we were doing the MTF process to top slice money from the USDG, particularly to fund some of the cost pressures that we had in the department. But unfortunately, when the results came, the adverse effect was more on the HSDG rather than the USDG. Even the municipality grant that is funding the emergency was also taken from your HSDG per se. Maybe we can move to the next. Chair, that amount of 518 is going to be earmarked. You would recall that we earmarked it even in the previous financial year, but this now stands as an allocation alone in the budget, or as an item. Not an earmarked, but is a specific funded program for this title deed restoration, and it can only be used for this program other than any amount to be transferred or redirected to this effect. So this amount, we will ensure that the provinces utilize them for the purpose that is intended for, in contrast to the current scenario whereby we've earmarked it, but for some other reason it gets utilized in other items except the title deed restoration program. So we shall be reporting on 518 million. Then we have an emergency housing conditional grant, which are twofold. The one is going to for municipalities, and as I indicated, this is in response to the disasters that are happening around the country. In total of the 2018-19, we have 400 million for the two grants that we shall be utilizing as human settlements to respond to the disaster-stricken areas and your provision of temporary shelter as defined in the policy or the framework for disaster management. Chair, I'm not sure through the DG and through yourself, I will hand over my mic to DG.
Thanks, CFO. We've asked the CFO to take us through the non-financials.
Thanks, Chair, members. Chair, what we've done is that in relation to each of the grants, you'll know that what we don't do is just disperse. So what we've done is that we've given you a summary of the targets, particularly in relation to the MTSS, the Provincial and Municipal Business Plans, what we've extracted in relation to the USDG, HSDG, and the targets in relation to that. So you'll see that that target has come down a bit, the 160 from, I think last year was 177. But that just gives you an indication. I think what is important here, Chair, is that it gives you an ability to be able to measure this against what the various provinces will achieve. That's the summary of the targets of the HSDG business plans per province, and that's reflective of what was the drop in relation to the HSDG. The only province that actually received any sort of increase in relation to the formula was the Northern Cape, and that was about 70 million rand point, and it's reflected in the targets that have been put. That's in relation to the municipalities, in relation to the sites as well as the units, and this is what will get delivered in those specific municipalities. And this covers this excludes the USDG, but it's something that we will then also add to this. Chair, in relation to the balance of the slides, Chair, it's basically to ensure that, I think, as we've indicated, it's important to read this APP of the department in conjunction with what the municipalities, provinces, and the entities, but more specifically the entities. So what we do is we hold each of the entities accountable for specific targets to be included in their APP, the strategic plan that they will present over the next 2 days starting tomorrow. So you'll see we've taken out that for you, and we've summarized what they are expected to produce. The two that will fluctuate, Chen or the three that are important, for example, in relation to the NHPRC, is that the linkage between the NHPRC and subsidy homes, that's on slide 37, the non-subsidized, the subsidized homes inspected, as well as the home builder registration approved. Then the Housing Development Agency, particularly in relation to this, and I suppose when the HDA does present, there is a segregation of catalytic mining towns, as well as the other programs that they fund. Nurture again, and Chair, just something that we might want to highlight is, which is not a big program, but is a which we think is a quite quite a groundbreaking one, and Najah will present it. Is the Contract of Finance and Development Program, specifically in relation to the program, based on the funding and what the arrangements get concluded between HDA, SHA, we think that perhaps maybe we will put a 50% we'll put a 50% target for women and the youth in relation to this, because this is one of the good points that we've been able to achieve from the Nelson Mandela intervention we made. Rural Housing Fund, again, Chair, and I think there's some really good important lessons that will come out of, particularly the Rural Housing Loan Fund and what it's been able to achieve. And there are some policy considerations that will come out of that. The same thing with the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the Community Service Schemes Ombud Service. Thanks, Dean.
Chair, that concludes our presentation. We're running through the entities because they will be presented tomorrow, so we don't want to bore you with all the details. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim. We must say we appreciate the fact that you included the entity, because when they present it, they know more or less the expectation, so we appreciate that. Honourable members, that's the APP of the department, as presented by the CGN team. I'm waiting for an indication of hand, or a hand that says they have covered everything. Let's go home. And that's what I'm going to do. How? This is the problem with after lunch, you see. Can members wake up while they are still trying to think? One of the things that I think history has raised it, I'm just re-emphasizing it. The fact that I know you are very strict with business plans when it comes to fraud and how you scrutinize them. But one of the things that the AG has raised, which you know, is the fact that the issue of the customized indicators vis-à-vis the business plan. That while you have indicators at national level, they don't seem to be clearly defined when it comes to processes. The argument is that from yourselves that the business plan should be enough. But what probably we need to understand, whilst we understand that, because remember, as they report to yourselves and as you put together the report from the process to the climate national report, then there seems to be a discrepancy in the sense that you are measuring them against what? You are measuring them against the business plan, but there are no clearly defined indicators. Maybe if you can probably just comment on that whilst the members are trying to find their tongues and their brains and collect themselves. Comment on that and then we will take the hands. I know now we're fine. We just need that 5 minutes to collect themselves. They're fine now. So maybe just talk on that and then we'll allow members to ask questions.
Chair, we spend a lot of time on this item with the AG. We've looked at provincial APPs. The only reason why we contract with provinces on the business plan, it is because we have a control of the $32 billion budget. I think it's $18 billion that goes to provinces. By law and in the Housing Act, if you look at the Housing Act, it stated explicitly that provinces have to submit a business plan to the National Department, who in turn will submit that business plan to National Treasury. The housing program is the most prescribed program. Everything that you buy out of the housing grant is prescribed, because the housing program is codified. It's either you buy in informal settlements upgrading, or you buy in an accredited residential program, or you buy a CRU. You're buying projects in program. So therefore, when we do performance reviews in every quarter, when they submit to us, they are quarterly targets. They are quarterly technical targets that they need to report to. You would have noticed that some provinces like KZN, Western Cape, which by the way, I think those are the two provinces that have been doing very well in terms of the audit outcomes. I think both provinces, the Western Cape and KZN, they have received a clean audit at some point. I think Western Cape got an unqualified audit with one match last year, but the year before last they got an unqualified audit with no matter, same as KZN. If you look at the program three of provinces, the bulk of what is in the business plan, if not all of it, is in program three. We've looked at the APP of KZN. What provinces do, but I guess this is what we discussed with the AG, the APP of provinces is divided into four programs, and in other cases it's five programs. Program 1, Program 2, 3, 4, and 5. Some of the budgets that they get to buy items in Program 1, or in Program 5, or in some cases in Program 2, is not coming from us. And bear in mind that human settlement is a concurrent function. So the MEC can create provincial programs or provincial activities. And he is not under obligation to report to us on those programs. But the programs that are purchased out of the grant, they have to report to us. And that's why they submit a business plan. And that business plan is what helps us track performance in our program three. Because the bulk of what is in that business plan is in program three. I think we've resolved that issue with the AG. We have explained it to them. Maybe what we needed to do is to call a, this is what I recommended to them, that we need a meeting with National Treasury, a meeting with DPME, and a meeting with the AG, and get them to understand the nature of the, because the only way we contract with provinces is not through the APP. We don't contract with provinces through the APP. We contract with provinces through the business plan. That's how we contract with them. But the business plan goes into program three of the APP, our program three and the provincial program three. And we said anything that is funded out of the grant, it has to be managed through HFS. So the AG has to look at the technical indicators that we buy, which goes through the HFS. That's what we said to them. That's the recommendation that we made to them. They were not very much interested in looking at the business plan. They were dismissing at some point the business plan. And we said start today, because that's where 90, if not 100% of the grant goes. It goes into buying things in the business plan, not outside the business plan. Then the business plan goes into program three. I just thought that customizing indicators for human settlements would mean putting those things that are in the business plan into program three. That's how we looked at it. And that's how we have managed over the years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Didri. I suggest what you said towards the end of your discussion must take place. That discussion between yourselves and the AG. Because it seems to be, you don't seem to be on the same page in terms of understanding. I'm quoting them verbatim. You don't seem to be in the same page in understanding the process. And that on its own is going to have an effect on the audit outcome. Because remember, if you can't find each other on that one, when then they do an audit, there's gonna be problems. Try and find each other now, so that thing is resolved. It doesn't seem to be a major thing, but try and find each other so that it gets resolved. Now my members are awake and very much happy. Can I now take the hands? Honorable Baha, followed by Honorable Solimalatsi. Who else wants to talk?
Thank you, Chair. The suggestion that we might have been asleep made me want to withdraw my hand. Because it was Alvin Bucket. No, Chair, I think that we can emphasize more on the conversation that we had with the AG. Because I think it would have an impact in terms of the department's audit, if it's not addressed, in terms of sitting down and threshing out all the issues that seem to be misunderstood from both sides. But Chair, mine is around the allocation, the budget allocation. I just want to get clarity. How much reason is given to allocation based on previous performance, where you would say those that have performed quite well in the previous financial year are then allocated more because they are able to deliver? Because I'm raising this question because I look at Gauteng, for an example, probably because of population and whatever other reasons are there. They are getting a big chunk of the funds. But if you look at how they performed as we speak, you would say that they deserve to get the least, if I may say. So my question basically is, how much do we base on performance as opposed to the business plan submitted by a province? Because for me, I would think that it's best to reward those that are able to deliver as opposed to looking at other aspects in terms of allocation. So that's my basic question. I think it applies as well to the metros, because it's like we rewarding non-performance in a way to say no matter how bad you perform, we can still give you a lot of money, you can play with it. And those that are doing well will then take penalized, for example, with a lesser amount when we do quarterly assessment, where we then take R1 million from one province and give to the other and so on. That's just my basic question, but I think in general, I'm happy with the APP chairperson and president. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I just have two issues that I'd like to be enlightened more on. One, obviously, is, the issue with the Human Settlements Bank, particularly with the legislation there, there are many areas that need to be put into place. And I just want to find out, because at the time that it was introduced, and even subsequent to the Minister's budget speech, operationally, the entities are moving towards, one seamless operational mechanism. But obviously the legislation was still outstanding, but that doesn't impact the actual operational matters. But now we're talking about, a key technical or administrative aspect of it, which is the capitalization by the Treasury. And, given the time frames, that are left now, in my view, it represents a particular challenge, with regards to the overall performance of the Human Settlements Bank, but also in terms of ensuring that there is certainty around the institution. Is there a way, of circumventing the process to ensure that, in as much as the operations are continuing to take place, they take place within a legislative framework, so that, we can never anticipate what will happen at a particular time, but to avoid that uncertainty that is currently there because of targets of the STML period. And secondly, with, the title of this grant, I think it's a very welcome, grant, particularly particularly given the magnitude of the challenges that we have had to date. But the one thing that hasn't been shared, and I'd like to get more insights on it, is apart from the grant itself, you know, what are some of the interventions that are being put into place that will, you know, boost the performance of this particular program? Because my understanding at this stage is that it just wasn't purely a financial resource issue. There were other serious, you know, administrative and technical issues that stood in the way of, you know, the performance being closer to the MTSF targets, so that we can then, you know, reconcile the introduction of this grant with its possible impact on performance and ultimately, you know, the difference that it will make in terms of service delivery. So that, you know, it's just not a matter of an introduction of an intervention, and therefore that means automatically it will address those gaps, so that we can be able to reconcile those. And I'm sure that, you know, the logic for the introduction of this is quite obvious, you know, but what we want to be able to measure ultimately is, in addition to the grant, these are the interventions that are in place, and this is the projected impact that it would make. Because, I mean, as we have been in this portfolio for some time, the importance of this program cannot be overstated, and what impact will be on the welfare of those that are affected by it. And just lastly, I mean, you know, I think in terms of the, I just frame it a different vision in terms of, you know, how the AGCs, you know, the last point that you've been making in Parliament, I think it's not like a train smash per se, but it's a matter of finding, you know, what is a compatible approach that does not deviate each of you from what you consider, you know, your basic line of reporting, so that ultimately what is presented in there is, you know, doubt proof, and that is completely done, because from where I'm sitting, it doesn't fundamentally affect the overall audit performance of the department, but it's about getting a proper understanding as to, you know, does this correlate ultimately to the outcomes. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honourable members. I want to start where you started in your, I think it was your introduction, where you said the department is in good hands in terms of management, and that. Between yourselves, you can count almost 100 years of experience. Oh, that's a lot of experience. Which then takes me to the next question that says, you know, in our interaction with the DG, with the AG, for instance, there was a question of some indicator details that you had to correct, go back and correct, and ultimately they were fine. And I think probably I'm just throwing this as a side question, that with all your experience, that is 100 years, you had to be corrected until you get to the right place in terms of your indicator. I'm just throwing it, you know. It shouldn't happen, because you by now you've been doing this, and you know exactly. So, what could be the challenge? What could be the challenge that makes you not get it right the first time? That it has to be corrected, so that we have a sense. The second part is the issue of the ICT. Even though COO is saying we're doing well, 90%, and thanking the HDA on assisting the department on this. But remember, this is one area that has always been appearing in the West Africa. It's one of your findings. So you're still saying 90%. you're not saying 100 or you're not saying 95. So what's the challenge? Why are we not able to resolve this issue? You know, clean and finish with it. Just so that we have an understanding. I think the issue of the diabetes has been asked, but since that's one area as well that has come out very prominently from the issue. The fact that there is not concrete evidence that shows the issue of the diabetes eradication in terms of the audit performance. Well, me and you knows why there isn't, because AICO, that's why the HU couldn't find it. It's not there, because we know that provinces are not performing. So that's why the HU couldn't find it. But the point I'm trying to make is, you are trying to put things in place now. You're putting a grant, you're doing everything, as Honorable Manas put it out. But what more? I don't believe on this. Because remember, already you are telling us that when it comes to diabetes and informal settlements, you're not going to meet the target. You are already telling us. You're saying we're not going to, please just know now that we're not going to meet the target of informal settlements and diabetes. And we also know this is one of the most critical areas. So probably that maybe tell us a little bit more. And Program 3, which is the lifeblood, is the core business of human settlement, is one program that we have not been doing our best in terms of performing. Everybody knows. Every time you come here, we sit and talk to you on Program 3. Because we never meet the target on Program 3. And now, yourself are saying, this is the last financial year in this term that you have to give to us. Now, APPs must always be entirely with the MPS. That's all we're offered to agree. Now, we just want to remind you that when you came to this debate, to this portfolio committee, in the first year to present your APP, and the MTS, you told us that by the end of this term, you are going to create 1.5 million housing opportunities. 1.5 million housing opportunities. At this time now, you should be able to see if you are getting there or not. Are we getting there? Maybe that's what we need to be told. And if not, what are the challenges? Remember, now, this is one financial year that we should be saying, yeah, no, what we had told the people in that first financial year and when we're presenting the MTSF, we are getting it. So maybe now, as you respond to these things, we need to hear as well about that projection that we made, that 1.5 million housing opportunities we are going to create. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let's start, Chair, with my colleagues will assist me with other questions. But I want to start with the budget allocation in incentivizing good performance in the budget allocation. I think it's important to perhaps to state that budget allocation is a constitutional matter. You have to allocate the budget equitably amongst all the provinces based on the constitutional principles of fairness. You can fix the DORA, the Division of Revenue Act, allows you to fix those poor performance issues in the review. In the Dora, there's a process that we always follow. I'm sure you've seen it with the city of Cape Town and Johannesburg in terms of USDG. What we are suggesting is that fix that, deal with those issues in the first quarter. Don't wait until the last quarter, because the last quarter is too late. If you have done your project readiness metrics on the business plan, the HSDG business plan, and you are convinced that in this province, early in the year, this particular province is not going to be able to meet its targets, why wait for March? So why wait for September? Why wait for the adjustment budget? So you would have noticed that this year, I'm sure the CFO didn't want to talk to this because we're still managing that process. There are three or four provinces where we have decided to withhold a significant amount of money right in the beginning. For instance, Gauteng is one of them. We have not allocated the entire 5 billion rand in Gauteng. We asked them to review and revise the projections, the cash flow projections, so that if we convince that Gauteng is not going to spend the allocation this year, we can shift the budget, a portion of the budget, from Gauteng to those provinces that will be able to spend the money. And we can do that in the first or at least second quarter. Don't wait for the third quarter or fourth quarter, because if you wait for the fourth quarter, it will be too late. You can't fix it in the allocation, but you can fix it in the division, in the application of the Division of Revenue Act, which allows you to shift the funds between poor performing provinces to high performing provinces. So it can still be done, but do it early, don't do it later. That's what we're recommending. The bank, the question about the bank, the Human Settlements Bank, if we get the Section 66 approvals from National Treasury, Section 66 simply allows the two entities, that is RALF and this is Section 66 is PFMA. It allows RALF and Nature to transfer their assets to NHFC. We've written to the Minister of Finance, I think in December, more than 2 months ago, asking for them to grant us the Section 66 approval. They're putting a lot of pressure on the DG, texting him, writing formal letters, reminding them. I think part of the problem is the changes in that department at an executive authority level that has caused the delays. I'm aware that the administrators have supported that decision. I think it's only waiting for the minister to apply his mind. And once that part is done, Section 66, we have one entity. The moment the Section 66 is done, there will be one entity, chair. All intents and purposes will have a bank, an operating entity. But we didn't wait for them. As we speak, you'll hear it tomorrow from the entities themselves. All the staff are under one room, one roof. The RAF staff, the NHFC staff, the Nature staff, they are all now in one building. They have a management model where the three CEOs are meeting on a monthly basis to discuss the business of the bank, without dropping balls on other things that they are busy with. So we're only waiting for Section 66. I think we will push for the passing of the bill. We have approved, the policy has been approved. We managed the policy aspect of it, but all what we're waiting now, we're waiting for now is the bill. We do have a draft bill. We can present it here and share it with you. We have a draft bill which is in line with what we're stating in the policy. We also have a business case. We've discussed the business case with public sector entities. We want to discuss it now with private sector entities and the banks. So there is a business case, and we ask you to pay attention to that business case, because it begins to tell you about products and services that the bank will be buying. You know, creating a bank is not just a technical exercise, it's also an ideological exercise. So there will be a battle of ideas on whether this is a good model that you are following and whether these are the good products that we want to provide. So please pay attention to that business case. It's available and we can share it with you. We did present it at the policy workshop. Then the third question is about, I'll talk to the title deeds and the COO and the CFO will talk to the ICT matter and the some of the challenges and some of the errors. I guess it's the point about the misstatements in the draft financial statement. The CFO can talk to that as well. And some of the errors in the two entities, I think the EAB and the CISOs, we can talk to those things and I'll ask them to deal with it. But in terms of the title deed, Chair, what measures are we putting in place? Yes, we have fixed the grant. Now we have a fully fledged grant. Chair, when we started in 2014, we talked about 818,000 title deeds that have to be issued. And that is post 1994, but pre 2014. We didn't understand the nature of the challenges that we have to deal with. But right now, we can give you a case study just to demonstrate what we have done. If you take Gauteng, out of the backlog of title deeds that we have to deliver in Gauteng, 133 properties are linked directly. Remember, 133 properties will lead to 133 title deeds. Now, 133 properties in Gauteng are linked directly to township registration processes, the opening of the township register, those planning processes, the subdivisions, what you do upfront. Remember, if you haven't opened the township register, you can't issue a title deed. And this is a planning issue. We can plot it, we can map it out, and we can tell you where, which townships are affected by this, the 183. We have also done what is called the occupation service inspection to check who is in these properties. Because remember, if you have issued this house, it was given to a beneficiary in 1998, you may find that somebody who is occupying it now is a fourth or fifth occupant. So we have done occupational service. We have visited the properties. We can plot spatially. We can tell you which townships were in Gauteng that are affected. I'm using Gauteng because that's where the biggest backlog is as well. The other part of the title deed, you may find that, yes, and this is the part where you find the mayors issuing title deeds. It is because these are title deeds that are sitting in provincial offices or they are sitting in municipal offices, but they're struggling in some cases to find the beneficiaries because the beneficiaries have moved on. But in some cases they will spend time follow, track beneficiaries until they are in a position to issue the title deeds. I think, Chair, we are wiser now than in 2014, in terms of understanding the nature of the title deeds. Throughout the country, I met the conveyancers on Friday, last week at St. George's Irene. I met with the HODs, I met with the conveyancers, I met with some of the service providers. Remember, the process, we can give it to you to look at it. The process involved, I think there are about 14 steps that you follow before you issue a title deed. But almost 8 of those steps are on the planning side. In other words, we have to fix, retrofit all those planning issues. And we can tell you which township where planning issues were not resolved. And which then means that you must hire the land surveyors, you must hire the town and regional planners, and hire all those specialists or professionals to deal with that issue before you can hand it over to the conveyancer for the conveyancer to interact with the deed office. Because you have to create a general plan, what we call the layout, the general plan, which is more like sketching, and in some cases you may find that is in the boundaries of the heavens are not correct, and you can't issue a title deed when that wall packing or boundaries and the designs wasn't done properly. So you have to fix that. But that entire process, the 14 steps, you have to manage it as one. You don't say somebody else will take care of this part and another person will take care of this. That entire workflow process, it has to be managed as one. And that's what we have acquired of this whole exercise. And that's what now we know needs to be done. I asked the DDG who is responsible for program tree, because this was under him, that let's beef up the PRTs, the professional resource teams, who can help us to manage this entire process, because it can't be managed by conveyancers. It can't be managed by land surveyors only. It can't be managed by transferring attorneys. It can't be managed by all these other individuals who are involved. You need one person under one roof to manage the entire process. That's what they have told us. We're making progress in KZN. We're making progress in Gauteng. We're making progress in the Northern Cape. I think Eastern Cape has started very late, but they are moving. We're still struggling in the Northwest, but we're getting there. We will be able to, again, we've asked that you give us a day to come and present the efforts, the interventions that we've put in place here. We have a number of case studies. It's not the same throughout the country. Gauteng decided to appoint MNS, which is a firm of attorneys, to manage the entire program for them, all of it, including occupancy surveys, including inspections and all of that. KZN took a different approach. The Western Cape, they have an in-house capacity. They have more than 80 people whose job within the department is to focus on title deeds. So the approach of managing it is not the same throughout the country. But maybe what we need to do when we come back, maybe in the fourth quarter, to present the fourth quarter results or the annual results, give us an item maybe to present on what our plans on the title deeds. I think we've made progress, but it's not at the level where you want it to be. We're still lagging behind. But I'm very convinced that by the year of this term of government, we would have achieved significant results. I'll ask Neville Chair to talk to the 90% ICT and also the 1.5 million housing opportunities. Maybe that has to be answered by the accounting office. We are able, Chair, to come to you. This is an APP which is forward-looking. When we present the annual results, the annual report, and the fourth quarter results, we'll be able to tell you where we are in terms of 1.5 million housing. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think it's just important to note, you know, on the title deed, just to supplement the DG, I mean, since the commencement of this program, we've managed to, out of the 818, registered 256,000 title deeds. So you know, in all of the discussions, it's important to note that work is being done, and there's 256,000 title deeds that have been 256,000 title deeds that have been registered, and that's important to note. So it's not like we're saying that nothing happened. It's just to pull. It's now to resolve that 562,000 that's left, you know, the 394 that we need to, or the 3/2014 that needs to happen. Chair, just in relation to the issue around the customized indicators, we have issued customized indicators. The DG has signed a letter today, but I think it's in a more sort of coherent way. The issue is that we do not have control over the provincial APP. That is a MEC and accounting officer HOD responsibility. What the AG expects us to do is to force the province to include the business plan targets in the APP. And that is something which we've raised with the AG, is we can only go so far. The DG can only go so far. You can issue the customized indicators to do that. That's the first thing. The second issue, Chair, is that there's this verification issue, and I'm sure that the AG raised this issue, but on the verification and the completeness and the accuracy. Now what happens is that if we report 10,000 title deeds delivered, and they go to the province and they find 11,000, they come back to us and ask us, well, why have you reported 10,000 and not 11,000? But if that 11,000 has not been verified, is not on the HSS, there's no concrete proof, we don't report on it. Now that's what happened last year. Last year they said, well, tell us what your verification process is. We showed them the verification process. This year, it's, well, you need to go one step further in relation to that. And I think we've said to them, well, we're not very far from each other, but I think what we need to be able to do is to just agree on what it is. It's also important to note that the AG as well has changed their team in the last year, 2 years, three times. And every time you have to do that, you have to go back and you have to explain to people how things are done. Because three personnel changes impact on the ability for them to understand how our work is. And I think we need to agree that it's complex. It's not easy. I mean, on the issue of the ICT, Chair, I've indicated the 90% that's in the APP is in relation to what the time frames are in relation to uptime of availability of the system. The ICT governance issues has been around the question of our ability to be able to, in relation to governance, our backup system, our policies. And I can tell you, Chair, on the issue of the policies, we resolved that. On the issue of the backups, we've been able to resolve that issue. One of the things that we have done, Chair, is that we've respected the ICT protocols in relation to CNAP. Now, there's other departments that have opted out, and I think that's the one issue that is that we need to. Chair, on the issue of the statement, Helen, I'll ask the Chair to raise it.
Thank you very much, Chair. The issue of the restatement is twofold. And I think I will also explain the issue of the investment. Chair, earlier on you would recall that I spoke of the National Housing Finance Corporation funding as an investment rather than the transfer payment. I'll park that for now, but let me just talk about the restatement of figures, Chair. The element here is a silly human error. And I think your question is so relevant to say, why don't we get it right the first time? But I must indicate, Chair, that the thing that had me having ulcers last year was that I went specifically down my knees to clean up the AFS. And you will recall that we have two processes in the audit. It's in the form of your findings during the process, and the final one, which is your annual financial statement, submitted on the 31st of May. The moment you press a button to Treasury, it's gone. You don't have any option or chance to correct it. That's why we've been given a chance from the 1st of April to the 31st of May to do all those human elements. Now what transpired last year, and it's a thing that when I look at the people, I'm like saying, how do I, and did you really not fire me for this one? How do I fire you on the last edge of having taken my time to be a technical person and do the annual financial statement with everybody in the office? At the last moment, you send a wrong document to National Treasury. And that on its own has costed us so much. But that being the case, we had to re-correct because you restate the figure. However, that material part of it becomes the core part of them being disclosed in your financial statement, not even in your management report. If it's in the management report, it depends on the materiality of the problem. But if it's so significant, then they put it on your AG report and becomes a public problem. So we have those kind of issues. We have put measures in place to correct that. We've appointed people this year, and I just hope that I will not go through the answers again. But I'm prepared to sit with Tapelo. We've indicated again to say we will sit with the AG on this one as well. But the most important thing that I think the AG has also raised with the committee is the issue of the investment. The issue of the investment was disclosed as a transfer payment in the past years. And it was audited as such. And we never had any challenge in as far as the transfer payment is concerned and the classification of that. Never has spoken of the changes in the personnel of the AG. And that has an impact. It becomes the battle of the accountants and the battle of the auditors. We do not seem to have the same common understanding of how to disclose a transaction in the books of account. But we shall always rely on, or rather we rely on the accountant general when we do not find each other. What happened in the past is that we had to change the disclosure note of the transfer payment to investment. Now, when we had a finding this year, we went beyond the year of 2017-18 to year 13, and it was found that all the investments that, or all the transfers that were disclosed as transfers were found to be findings in this year. And this is what AG is talking about this year. So we are correcting that to the, but the amount is big. But we are avoiding it again to be put in the AG report of 2017-18 closing the year. So that we are dealing with. But Chair, I think as we speak, we do not want to argue much with AG, but we want to have a common understanding, because ultimately, just like the issue of the title deed, they take a win. We agree to say this is how we're going to do, and then ultimately when it comes to the final report, they disclose it as such. But we agree to say we shall put it in writing in this financial year, and the DG has agreed to that. Thank you.
I think we've covered most of the questions, Chair, that you've asked.
Thank you very much, DG and the team. That takes us to almost to the end of the discussion of the integration government plan of the department. We all understand that this is going to be work in progress, because this is what we will be monitoring the department on as we then get those quarterly reports, so that we can see whatever they are reporting to us is in line with what they have presented to us. And I think it's been a long day. Honorable Baha, it's been a long day. I think we are done for today. Tomorrow, we are dealing with four entities. We are going to start at 9. At 9 on the dot, I am starting. Whether you are sitting on your chair or not, I'm starting. So that we are able to finish on time.
Oh, in the corner of me.
Yeah. Yes, luckily this meeting don't need the corner. So I'm starting. So starting at 9 tomorrow, we will still be in the same venue. Only on Thursday we will be back in Parliament. So tomorrow we are here. 9 o'clock, we start here. Thank you very much to the